Well, good morning. Good morning, good morning. Before we jump in this morning, I want to give you all a moment just to reflect on this question. And this might be a fun question for some of you. But when you travel, all right, times you go to different places, visit around the world, visit around the country, is your preference to visit well-known spots or to find something less known off the beaten path? All right? And what factors into your preference? Like, why do you prefer one more than the other? All right, so think about that and go ahead and share with someone next to you. I'll give you a moment to do that. All right. So when it comes to travel, anyone want to share some of their preferences? What is it that kind of drives your preference for one or the other? Anyone?
Lesser known.
Lesser known. Is there something? Mystery, all right? You like the mystery of something that's not as known?
Having small kids, so no.
So just no to travel in general. Yeah, just can't do it. That's fair, that's fair. Anyone else? Yeah, so you do like kind of going through some of the famous landmarks and kind of going through them just to say that you've done it or to be able to experience it. Anyone else? Ezra? You're just stretching. Got it. You had me there. So today is actually Rachel's and my anniversary. So celebrating 23 years. And fun fact, we actually share the same anniversary date as Brandon and Claire, which is a fun coincidence. So we really should do a double date tonight. Chili's, right? I think Brandon Chili's at 6 p.m., is that? Okay. But back when we were celebrating our 15-year anniversary, Rachel and I, we traveled to Iceland, and we did a road trip around the entire island, which, I mean, just beautiful, diverse landscapes, just all contained on one island. And not to mention all the amazing waterfalls. I don't know if things have changed since we've been there last, but back then you could literally just drive up to any waterfall. You could actually camp there for the night. Like, they had no rules. Like, you could do pretty much anything. And we did hit a lot of the popular sites, the sites that were easy to get to, very drivable. But one of my favorites was Glumur Waterfall, which is the second highest waterfall in Iceland. But it requires a rugged hike to get to. And so when we got to the trailhead, what was most noticeable was the lack of crowds. I mean, we barely ran into anyone on our entire hike to the waterfall. We had to cross streams. We had to go through cave. We hiked up some really steep paths. But getting the view when we got to the waterfall was amazing, and even the views that were leading up to it. And we got such a fuller experience of Iceland by taking this trail, this path that was less traveled. And this morning, our lectionary text is Psalm 1, which is the first in a collection of many poems and songs. And collectively, the Psalms offer different reflections of who God is, how we experience life, both the challenging moments and the ones we're celebrating. And so this first psalm is most likely written by David, who also wrote a lot of the psalms. And he presents a couple of paths for our consideration. So there's a path of flourishing, full of life, and then there's a path that doesn't lead to a good end. And Jesus actually offered this same image of contrasting paths during his Sermon on the Mount. And I love the First Nations version and translation of how Jesus describes this. It says, "To walk Creator's good road, you must enter this small gate and walk a narrow path that leads to the good life. Only a few find and walk this road, but the gate is large and the path is wide that leads to a bad end. Many walk this road." And so we're given this invitation, you know, to navigate a path that offers flourishing and fulfillment, and at the same time, it may not be the most convenient, efficient, or easiest path to walk. And so the question I want to explore this morning is, in our journey to move towards the flourishing and fullness of life that God offers, what are the less traveled paths that we're invited to walk on and walk through. And as we walk through Psalm 1, we'll explore some of these paths and how they might look for us in practice. So we start in verse 1. Happy are those who do not follow the advice of the wicked, or take the path that sinners tread, or sit in the seat of scoffers, but their delight is in the law of the Lord. And on God's law they meditate day and night. And so the start of this psalm presents the contrasting paths of the wicked and those who delight in God's law. And in the church context that I grew up in, this text was taught strictly through a moral lens, right? It was about following all the literal commands of Scripture. Meditation meant memorizing and being able to recite as much Scripture as humanly possible and that your brain could hold. Like, I grew up doing Bible drill exercises. Anyone else do that? Yeah, that was pretty good, not to brag, but... But to be honest, there wasn't much delight in that. It was duty, fear, and judgment that were the primary motivating factors. And it was purely a cognitive exercise that really wasn't a path that resulted in living better. And this Hebrew word, right, for law, here is Torah, which literally means teachings or instructions. And the Torah referred to the first five books of the Hebrew Scriptures, which had been written after the Hebrew people had been freed from slavery in Egypt. And many of the commands that were written were in the context of what it meant to be free and to be reminded of their liberation in order to have empathy for others who were also oppressed. This is how Rabbi Michael Strausfield reflects on the Torah. He says, Torah is first and foremost about freedom. Torah is not, as commonly believed, about 613 commandments. Rather, it is 613 counsels that teach us how to escape to freedom. The purpose of Torah is to encourage us and remind us to strive to live a life of compassion, loving relationships, and devotion to our ideals. The Torah understands the lure of Egypt and how easy it is to become enslaved, how past patterns can keep us chained to unwise or even harmful behavior. Just the weight of the past can increasingly impede our journey forward. And so he's saying that meditating on God's law should have a connection with freedom. And for us, as we consider the less traveled path to flourishing, we're invited on a path that delights in freedom. Freedom both in our own lives and freedom for those who are experiencing oppression. Right? It's the core message of so many of the current protests, right? That no one is free until we are all free. This month is AIPI Heritage Month, which celebrates the Asian American and Pacific Islander culture and communities in this country. And being a Chinese American myself, you know, our history in this country is long and also painful. During the late 1800s, many Chinese immigrants, you know, built the railroads during the Gold Rush. They experienced tremendous racism and xenophobia. And eventually that resulted in the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882. Where this country actually chose to single out and prohibit Chinese immigrants from entering. And they finally reversed it in 1943, but as they began to allow Chinese immigrants in, they were very selective in those who could actually contribute something in terms of skill set into the society. And so that played a huge role in shaping our experience as the model minority. And it wasn't until the late 60s and early 70s that Asian American actually became an identity group. And it primarily came out of social activism and political advocacy for those of Asian descent. They were inspired by the civil rights movement, the Black Power movement. And even though it was such a broad category that grouped hugely diverse Asian cultures all together, there was a need to coalesce around shared experiences of racism and prejudice. And of course, this also had an impact on Asian American faith communities and shaped their theology. You know, I recently came across the work of Wong Tian An, who is a Malaysian professor currently up in Michigan. And he wrote a book called An Asian American Liberation Theology as an attempt to trace back in history the formation and influence of liberation theology in our context. And I'll admit that growing up in a Chinese American church, right, liberation theology was not on the forefront of our faith, which is what Wong highlights. He names that we have to acknowledge that most of our Asian American theology is actually deeply rooted in white supremacy. And this is one of his reflections. He writes, "What Asian American theology affords us is the pulling back of the curtain on the interlocking power structures in which Asian American identity arises and is complicated. But rather than a will to power, which only serves to further assimilate Asian Americans into standing structures of oppression, it is the will to powerlessness that undergirds all of these moves away from these Faustian deals and toward collective liberalism, liberation, sorry. So what he's saying there is that we as Asian Americans have preferred to blend in for the sake of convenience and not wanting to lose our status as, you know, honorary whites, which then aligns us with the power structures instead of aligning with the oppressed. And he's almost holding up a mirror and asking us as Asian Americans, like, are we delighting more in the fact that we have assimilated so seamlessly to gain a false sense of power? Or are we willing to find delight in letting go of power in order to walk and work towards the freedom and liberation for all those who are oppressed? And so for us, maybe that's a question we all need to reflect on as well, right? Especially when we consider those who are experiencing oppression, violence this very moment, whether it's in Gaza or Ukraine or Sudan, many other parts of the world. Like, what would it mean for us to delight in facilitating and advocating for the freedom of others, even if it's a less traveled path? And then we continue in verse 3. "They are like trees planted by streams of water, which yield their fruit in its season, and their leaves do not wither. In all that they do, they prosper." So the poet uses imagery from nature to capture what a path of fruitful living looks like. And he paints this soothing and calming picture of lush trees planted near clear flowing water that allows these trees to be cared for, to be healthy. And the thing about nature, like trees and streams, is that there's just simply being, right? It's a natural process for trees to grow, for streams to flow on their own. It's the way God created them. And for us, as we consider the less traveled path to flourishing, we're invited on a path to consent to the Creator, right? The divine who has created everything, to lean into who God has made each of us to be, instead of inauthentically trying to be something we're not, or being limited by fear, right? That's something we can learn from trees, which is how Thomas Merton reflects on them. He says, "A tree gives glory to God by being a tree. It consents to God's creative love. It expresses an idea which is in God's mind. So the more a tree is like itself, the more it is like God." And I think each of us is invited to lean in to the way God created us, to allow what's already intrinsic in us to actually flow and surface. You know, for me, this current season has been an invitation to explore areas and opportunities that either I wasn't given the space to do before, or I felt hesitant about. Last summer, when Lena, who was our Vesper event coordinator here, stepped down to move on to a new job, we had a lot of conversations about that job description, what that would look like, what would it mean to hire someone else to replace her. She even offered some helpful suggestions around what the role needed to have more of, and just the integration between Vox and Vesper. And as we went through the process of discerning and listening, something surfaced within me, right? That almost seemed too obvious, and yet I also felt hesitation in making a shift like that. Like, was it selfish of me to do that? Would it be something that I could actually excel at? And yet it was an opportunity to consent to what was internally surfacing, right? To give space for something to grow and sprout that had been laying dormant. And so I proposed to our leadership team the idea that I shift my role here to oversee our partnerships, to bring back the partnerships team, to oversee what happens here at Vesper as our main tool for connecting with our city, with our neighborhood. And since last fall, we've formed an amazing partnerships team that Claire and I provide leadership for. We've established our new local partnership with IACT and been participating in different ways with their house painting project, you know, with the Red Bench conversation that Caroline mentioned earlier. And then when I started to respond to Vesper inquiries at the beginning of this year, it was a learning process for me because I was really leaning into the non part of nonprofit. Like I was just giving the space away, basically, which was, you know, it's always been our dream and vision for what we wanted this building to be, but I also need to balance the fact that we need private rentals to help fund and the costs of being able to offer the space for free to nonprofits. So I'm still working on that. And another thing that I haven't been great about is sharing with our community, right, all the things that have been happening here. And so I do want to just highlight a few things that have happened the last couple of months here. So at the end of March, we hosted a collaboration of sound healers and sound artists who were brought together by a group called The Alchemists. And one of their members immigrated from Mexico as a child, when their family crossed the border and all they had was just their backpack. There were three siblings total, and today one of them is a citizen, one's still going through the immigration process, one's undocumented. And last year, like 30 years after they initially crossed the border, these three siblings hiked the entire US-Mexico border and just documented their journey, filmed it, just to share their message that everyone belongs. And so this event we hosted was a celebration of that journey. And then in April, we hosted a sitar and qawwali concert, which is a Sufi expression of music and poetry. And from what I understand, I think they're the only musicians in Austin that's trained in this form of music. And they even got a grant from the city of Austin to highlight and bring awareness to music like theirs. A couple weeks ago, we hosted a nonprofit group that put on a fashion show where kids with autism participated. They walked the runway. They also showcased West African fashion as a way to raise funds for this nonprofit. And just yesterday, a group called King, which stands for Kids in a New Groove, held their music concert here. And this new nonprofit works with kids who don't have the resources to have their own instrument or take lessons. And so these kids are paired up with a musician mentor to help them in their journey of learning and creating music. And yesterday was an opportunity to showcase what they had learned in front of their family and friends. And then a couple of other things coming up. At the end of this month, we're hosting a solo play called Group Therapy that this individual is experimenting with in order to create connection and vulnerability in a communal context. And then hopefully during the summer, we plan to host a group called AURA, which stands for Assistance for Ukrainian Refugees in Austin. And what's amazing about this organization is that the founder, she was a tourist here in Austin a couple of years ago. And the day before she was supposed to fly back to Ukraine, the war broke out. And so she wasn't able to go back, and she's been a refugee here ever since. And in that time, she started a 501c3 that offers English classes and community for their artisans. And so she says there's about 500 Ukrainian refugees here in Austin. And so I share about all these events and these groups and these stories because this has always been the dream for whatever space or building that we inhabit as a community. to offer this physical space as a gift to organizations and individuals in our city. And for me personally, it's been so meaningful and life-giving to step into this role, to make connections, to practice hospitality on behalf of this community. And part of that process was me leaning into and making space for a path that I had not considered or given much intention to before. And so for us, what does it look like to consent to who God has made us to be? You know, maybe a practice we can try this week is just to make space in order to consider what might be surfacing within us in this season. And what might be the barriers to leaning more fully into who we authentically, intrinsically are. And then we close in verse 4. The wicked are not so, but are like chaff, and the wind drives away. Therefore the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. And so again, you know, the poet's contrasting two paths. The wicked take one that doesn't lead to flourishing. And then those who are attempting to pursue right and just living, right? Those who are looking for or facilitating freedom, liberation, their path has guidance from the divine. You know, if we look back at the Torah in the book of Exodus, we read the story where God used Moses to lead the Hebrew people out of Egypt and out of slavery. And during their escape and journey to freedom, right, God used a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night to guide and to keep watch over them. They didn't have clarity, right? They didn't have a drone view of the path they were traveling. But there was guidance as God revealed the next step in real time for them to follow. And so for us, as we consider the less traveled path to flourishing, I think we're invited on a path that's slowly being revealed by the divine, sometimes over time. And as much as most of us would like to see the entire map, the entire itinerary laid out, sometimes we can't actually fully understand or make sense of the entire journey if it's already revealed to us up front. And perhaps our invitation is simply to take the next step, and then the next step, as we discern the path that God reveals. You know, some of you might have a bit of insight into the path and journey that Vox has been on as a community since its origin. But I can tell you for sure that over 17 years ago, when we planted this community, like, I would never come close to predicting where we are as a community now. So much of our journey was patiently looking and waiting and then finding the path that God was slowly revealing for us. Right, we started as an Asian American community that was heavily college-age students. And then as we stumbled upon an old nightclub in East Austin that had been shut down on 12th Street, we moved in, started a community center, tried to learn how to be good neighbors. We made mistakes, we learned a lot in the process, and we also burned ourselves out. And that's when the path of contemplative practice was revealed, and we began to learn how to tend to our inner soul. And then we began to have conversations and learning around becoming fully affirming and inclusive of our LGBTQ siblings. And as a result of that decision, our path became clear that we needed to leave the denomination that we were a part of because it was no longer safe or supportive for our community. And then most recently, the path towards a non-hierarchical and a shared leadership structure was revealed. And all of this feels like a slow burn over the years. And yet it's comforting to know that the collective wisdom and discernment of this community allows us to move forward with trust and groundedness. Because none of these shifts were a convenient or efficient path. These were all paths that were less traveled and required a lot of intention, conversation, reimagination. This is a sneak peek, but this coming weekend, Eugene Kim will be flying in from Boston to be with our community for a few days. And he's going to guide some conversations that our staff and navigation team are going to be having. And then he's also going to be preaching this next Sunday. And I recently met Eugene last December at a gathering of some pastors whose churches were either kicked out or had left the denomination that we were formerly part of. And so we've been having some big picture conversations around, you know, what's next in terms of denominations or partnerships or networks, collectives, especially for these churches who no longer have a home. But Eugene runs a nonprofit think tank that he calls the New Wine Collective. And he started this at the beginning of pandemic. And he's trying to create space and conversation for how innovation can reimagine something new in this current landscape of church. These are the values of the New Wine Collective that that have so much alignment and resonance with who we are as a community. And I'll just read them quickly for you. So the values are love, not dogma; curiosity, not certainty; mutuality, not hierarchy; compassion, not condemnation; and inclusion, not exclusion. And you can read more in depth about these values on his website, but he's going to be guiding our conversations as a leadership team in terms of helping us design and articulate what shared leadership means with more clarity and what that practically looks like here in our community. And this is just another less traveled path that we're grateful to have another conversation partner to collaborate with us on this journey. And so as we close, my hope for us, Fox, is that in our individual and collective journeys of moving toward the fullness of life that God invites us to, that we would have courage to discover, to walk on the path thus traveled, that we would do the collective work of discernment, navigate the path, even if it feels inconvenient or uncertain or challenging. And so let me close with this Franciscan prayer. May God bless us with discomfort at easy answers, half-truths, and superficial relationships, so that God may live deep within our hearts. May God bless us with anger at injustice, oppression, and exploitation of people, so that we may work for justice, freedom, and peace. And may God bless us with tears to shed for those who suffer pain, rejection, hunger, and war, so that we may reach out our hand to comfort them and to turn their pain into joy. And may God bless us with enough foolishness to believe that we can make a difference in the world, so that we can do what others claim can't be done, to bring justice and kindness to all our children and the poor. And so we ask all this in the love of God our Creator, in the freedom of Christ, and the guidance of the Spirit. Amen.